Free FM.
Here you can be free.
Penn Jillette.
Yeah, this is Penn Jillette on Free FM, sitting here with Michael Goudeau on a very, very special Penn Jillette show. We have here people in our movie, The Aristocrats, and in the movie, The Aristocrats, many people say, if you could tell this joke on stage, you are a god. That's what everybody says. Two people in the movie tell the joke on stage. It's Gilbert Gottfried and our guest today, Lisa Lampanelli, who is the now, I believe, the one, two, three, four, five, the sixth aristocrat we've had on this show. We had Wendy Liebman, Gilbert Gottfried, Paul Provenza, Bobby Slayton, Carrot Top, and now Lisa Lampanelli. And you tell the joke.
Yeah, I know.
On
I couldn't
stage.
Believe it. I was so scared when I did it because Provenza. First of all, I didn't think the movie was ever going to get made.
Well,
I'm like
did.
This loser with a dream, Provenza. Comes up to me at the Comedy Cellar. And, of course, I didn't know it was Provenza because he was sitting in the back, you know, yeah. when he was watching. So I'm calling him a Jew and a this and a that and a money grubbing heave and all this. And then he comes up to me after going, oh, my God, you're famous. I seen you on some NBC sitcom that sucked. You know? And I was like, wow, man. And he's like, can I film you for this movie? And you know, I get interviewed for a ton of documentaries
sure,
that never get
sure,
made.
Sure.
So the loser with a dream comes over to my apartment and I'm like, this is fun, you know? I thought he was just going to try to bang me, but, you know. I hadn't had a white guy in a long time, you know? And I was like, well, I did lose some weight, so I thought I might get a white guy. So I was like, he actually interviewed me, and it made it to the screen. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
So he goes, tell this joke on stage. And I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, that was scary, man, because it's like the most classically unfunny joke to anyone except comics.
Exactly, yeah.
And so the audience went with it. I was like, thank God.
Well, it sounded like, and I wasn't there when you filmed that, but it sounded like the deck was stacked a bit. It sounded like you were killing before that.
Well, yeah, I mean, what I did was,
and you came on
exactly.
in the highest part of your show.
Oh, yeah, like I did my first 10 minutes, you know, I'm an insult comic, so I was, you know, just
insulting
everybody. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was doing my black jokes, my Hispanic jokes, my fag jokes, and then I'm like, okay, now here's a joke that's not going to be funny. I think I probably even said that, and it killed, and I was like, cool. I was like, thank you, good night.
Well, you gave us the a phrase, which I don't know if it's originally yours, but we use it all the time on Indian, you know, Slurpee Indian or Casino
Yeah,
Indian.
Yeah, I just did that on The Tonight Show, and they tell you the truth, Jay Leno, I swear to God, when I said that, he cried. It was fantastic. My joke is, because I actually got asked out by a guy who was half black, half Indian, so I go Slurpee Indian, not Slurpee Indian, Casino Indian, because that's a different smell altogether. Because they both stink, but in different ways. You know, one of those cab drivers going to learn curry is not deodorant. So, of course, Jay, like, just starts crying. I'm like, all right, that's cool. I do like that one.
Yeah, it is good. And it also is going around, and it's become part of the culture. You
know,
for a long
good.
Time, it was dot or feather.
Right.
When you wanted to be racist about our...
Well, you know what? If I could contribute something to society, I'm so happy it was that. That and saying the C word night after night on stage.
Night after night. Famous for it.
I know. I love
it. It's really wonderful. There were so many comics in the 80s, you know, that were these women comics who had no reason to be comics. And finally, and one of the things we wanted to do in The Aristocrats, and one of the major goals, was to just say that it's all the same. You know, once you're a good comic, there's no difference between someone who's good and unknown and Robin Williams. They're all doing the same thing.
Right.
And we also tried really hard to do that with the women.
Using
our heroes like Phyllis Diller.
Oh, she was the best. My theory is, okay, women comics sometimes take the easy way out. They forget to write punchlines. They always yap about their stupid shopping and their dating and their PMS and their coach bag. If I want to hear a hooer complain, I'll stay at home with my wife. So men don't like to see women comics usually because most of them are unfunny and should die of cancer. So I'm sorry, I shouldn't mention cancer. I'll have to buy another rubber bracelet. Oh my God. Enough with the disease bracelet. Some gets a sore left one from riding a bicycle and I got to spend a dollar on his disease. Lance, I don't wear yellow. Anyway, so most women comics, men are not going to pay to go see. They have a large women following or a homo following. I like to think I have a crossover. Men like to see Lisa Lampanelli because I'm like a guy on stage, you know, with the boobs and a... I'm sure you'll have to cut that out, but that's okay. One bleep per show, not a problem.
Not a problem, no. You have a few bleeps.
Yeah,
what bracelets do you have?
Oh, cancer, boob cancer. I got my C cancer one at home. That has hair around it. That's hot. I even bought the sickle cell anemia for the blacks, the SARS for the Asians, and the poor Hispanics don't even have their own disease unless you count laziness. So, you know, because there's some lazy people. Come on. Vampires do more during the day than a freaking Hispanic. Once you go reeking a job, you'll be seeking. I'm joking, of course. They don't want to work. It's good making like a legitimate guy like you laugh. You know what I mean? It's so cool, though. Like, you're one of my heroes, and you're actually laughing at me. I'm going to go home and spank one out. I really am. I'm going to spank it out to you. I'll spank to your record to you, biatch.
Where did you start, Governor?
Connecticut, believe it or not, because can't you tell I'm freaking classy?
Yes.
I know I'm a classy bitch. And then I did the road for like 7 years and moved to New York because I said, I need some TV credits. So the first thing I was on was that roasted Chevy Chase on Comedy Central, which was absolutely the biggest train wreck in the world.
You know, I watched a little bit of it, and it was the first time I'd seen a roast like that. They're always supposed to be incredibly mean.
I know.
With this bed of love underneath.
There was no love for that guy.
It was astonishing.
Well, he had no friends. No friends would show up because everybody hates him. So they had to ask people like me, who wasn't even known, and the Friars Club just said, you know, you got to put her on because she's a roaster. She's really funny. Yeah. And he had no friends because I had some joke, which was like, Jane Curtin at the time was on Broadway. I go, Jane couldn't come because she's on Broadway and she couldn't make the trip. Because it was like one block away. And I said, Garrett Morris was going to come, but he's parking my car. Nobody likes that guy.
It was amazing. I was talking to him on the phone, and I right after I'd seen it, and I had no idea what to say. It was kind of like if you don't have a sense of comedy, I believe that's what you think all roasts are.
No, all roasts. You know what? Because I never watched stand-up. Everybody asked me what my influences are. Mm-hmm. I never saw stand-up as a kid. I always watched those Dean Martin roasts on NBC.
They were fabulous.
Oh, my God. The commercial for them is better than most of what's on TV right now.
Yeah, fabulous.
So I'm like, that's love. You know, when you see, you know, Red Fox and Rickles, you go, you know, they all liked each other. Uh-huh. Or at least they gave the air that they liked each other. But with Chevy Chase, everybody was looking at
him. When you were sitting on the dais.
Oh,
when you were,
it was miserable.
And when did you go on? How far?
Of course, I was unknown completely, so I went second to last. And I was like, I got to bring it because this is my chance to really get something done here. And I killed, thank God. You know,
but
the Friars Club.
How could you?
Well, because I'm pretty loud. You know, when I
know, but I
think the first thing I said, you know, I go, wake up, people are kicking in the... And to me, it's like, you know, I just had to wake them up a little bit. That's how I am.
Oh, I know that. But what I'm saying is that the vibe was so totally destroyed. I mean, it was such a... I mean, and I guess talking to Chevy, they had to really force him to do it.
Definitely.
And tell him it was going to be okay.
Yeah.
And I think that even if you're on the dais with people who love you, and even if you're showbiz all the way through, that much kind of attention and personal stuff being brought up must be difficult. Even if you're Sinatra.
Well, certainly.
Of course, you'd have everybody killed then.
But. Well, yeah. And rightfully so, because we're Italian and we get things done. Right. But here's the deal with Chevy. He sat there. Okay, I just roasted last week, two people right in a row, Artie Lang and Jerry Lewis. In two days, I did these two roasts. Both of them were gentlemen, laughed at everything, had a good sense of humor, and had a great vibe. This guy, Chevy Chase, could not take a joke. He sat there the whole time, wouldn't look at anybody, was taking notes like to intimidate us that he wasn't listening. And at one point, I hit him on the shoulder and I said, listen, stupid, because I'm not putting up with any crap. This is my moment. I got to make it big. You know what I'm talking about? I'm not going to be, you know, unknown forever.
You know, the thing is, it's a chicken or egg thing. One of the reasons those people could take it is that the love for them was real.
Absolutely.
I mean, once you take that away, if you put Jerry sitting there with people who really didn't have a bass tone of love underneath, and I don't imagine Jerry would have taken it well either.
You're probably
right. It's this weird, complicated thing. You know, trying to hit it there. Do you know how Joey Bishop got really well known? Do you know this story?
Mm.
Oh, this is the greatest story in the world. Cool. And you relate to this a lot because of what you just said about being on the roast. Joey Bishop had his one shot. He was going to be on an Atlantic City charity type show. Completely unknown in the 50s, okay? In the audience is, you know, Sinatra, Marilyn Monroe, everybody. It's his first time on there. And he's getting ready to go on. And just as he's about to go on, Danny Thomas, who in the, you can make a ton of jokes about that.
Yeah.
Let's skip those. Danny Thomas was in the audience, and he was the biggest star of the time.
Right.
You know, he was Adam Sandler. He was, you know, Robin Williams, probably bigger than both of those. Jerry Seinfeld, all wrapped up together. He was a huge star.
Right.
And right in the middle of the show, right before Joey Bishop was to go on, the MC starts introducing Joey Bishop, and Danny Thomas just stands up. And from the audience, starts telling stories and doing stuff to, you know, in killing the crowd, and wanders up on stage and then does like another 10 minutes off the top of his head.
Wow.
Superstar, changing history, right? And then he leaves, not backstage, but leaves through the audience, shaking hands with people as he goes.
Oh, my God.
And walks out. And then the MC comes back on and goes, and now a very funny young man, Joey Bishop. And Joey Bishop walks up, walks out, stands to the stage, grabs the mic, and goes, everything he said goes double for me.
Nice.
Jumps off the stage and walks through shaking hands with everybody.
That's great.
And from then on, he was totally in the click.
See?
Everybody just loved him. And I just think about being backstage, and this is your big shot. So you've got your 12 minutes that you have the best 12 minutes you're ever going to do.
Right.
And the willpower to sit back there and go, nope. I'm going another way with this.
That rocks.
And walking out shaking hands.
That's
crazy.
Beautiful. Because that's the thing about a roast. It's all sort of, you have to be willing to like stretch and do whatever that it happens because of what happens before that. Like I always have 12 pages written and you only need five. Because you know you're going to have to cut out a bunch of crap and everything. You're going to have to edit. At the Jerry Lewis roast, two guys before me tanked. I mean, they ate their own, you know what. And I was just like, oh my God, what do I do? Because the audience was dead. So I go up and I just go, oh, Paul Schaefer, because he was awful. I go, ah, Paul Schaefer. Schaefer, he sucked the funny out of me. I go, man. I go, watching him, I was nervous, and I'm not the one who sucks. So, you know, I just like, you have to just, I mean, that wasn't written down. You just have to go with it.
Now, did you know Chevy at all?
What, Chevy Chase? No. I mean, definitely not.
I'd never met him.
No. The Friars Club had just pushed me on because they said she needs a shot on Comedy Central. We believe in her. You know, so that it's because of them. And then things started to happen after that. But like, even Jerry Lewis, for example, a couple weeks ago, by the way, I credit myself for his heart attack. I really did. I was so freaking funny. So I thought I wasn't going to be asked to do that roast because I'm so dirty and he's like wanting it classy. But he saw me on The Tonight Show and requested me. So I'm like, this old bastard, now I can really say what I want because it's his fault. You asked for it, stupid. You got it. Heart attack waiting to happen.
Now, when you did the Chevy Chase roast, I don't know why I'm so fascinated by this.
Because it was a cluster. It was horrible.
But you didn't have any jokes specific for Chevy?
Just I did. I had a ton of jokes for him, but they cut a lot of them out because so many people focused on him, and they didn't want to overload it, so they edited mine to be more about everybody else.
Let's go safe. Let's have her go racist. Is that what they said?
Absolutely.
We're in a little trouble on this. We're not sure. Send Lisa out to make some really racist jokes.
Say the N-word, Lisa. You're
so
all
we'll
set.
At least know where our problems are.
Right.
That we know how to fight these battles. We fought them with Bill Maher. We'll be okay.
Right, right. Too funny, man. That was like the wildest thing I've ever been a part of. I was scared. But you know what? You go up like you're not, and boom, it's all set.
It's all okay. Well, you know, in the Aristocrats, you know, which is... Provenz was like, when we were going through the first list of people that he wanted, you were like at the top of the list.
Which I couldn't believe it because nobody knew me at all.
Well, Provenz did. You know, there were a few people that were at the time we were, and remember, you know, we weren't shooting when it came out. That's what people don't know.
Right.
We were shooting this, you know, 2001, you know.
Right, right.
And so Provenz just was going, I said, well, I don't even know her stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And there were a few that we said, you know, trust me. I had Jay Marshall, you know, real old vaudeville guy, and Eric Mead, who did the card trick.
Right, right.
And Stephen Banks, who did the mime.
Right.
Those were ones that I said to Provenz, you haven't seen them. Trust me on
this.
And he had his list like that, too. And it, strangely, those were the people that really, really killed in the movie.
Oh, they totally did.
And
yeah.
I loved that he made you tell the joke on stage.
That was really cool.
After he got you saying, who tells jokes on stage, means you're a total hack.
Yeah, I know. Thanks for the editing. Oh, you wouldn't believe, too, after my shows, how many people come up with that DVD and have me sign it.
Oh, that's
like,
great.
People, they want every aristocrat to sign that thing. It's so cool. It's like this cult thing that really took off. I couldn't believe
it. Yeah, I know. They come up with it, and they go great. And what really surprises me about the aristocrats, and I guess it didn't surprise me as much as did other people, everybody was saying, you know, this is going to be a movie for, you know, 18-year-old frat boys and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was always saying, those people got rap. That's a whole, you know, the hip-hop stuff is already covering doing this, this is going to be for older people.
Definitely.
If you want the ideal audience for this, it's probably Turner Broadcast. You know, Law and Order, The Aristocrats.
Right, that's what
it probably should be. I believe that's the audience because they understand that camaraderie.
Well, I mean, also, the movie really isn't just like, hey, here's a dirty joke lots of times. It's really analyzing why the joke works. Because the joke is funny on so many different levels, as you know.
Well, the hard part of doing that was, you know, we only were going to do like 10 people and just kind of friends of ours. And we kind of broadened out. And I called George Carlin. And I said, you know how you hear jazz guys play over the same changes, but you never hear comedians tell the same joke. And there was a long pause. And George Carlin said, this is a really good idea.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, it's too good an idea for you to get. You're not smart enough to get this idea, which is a shame for the rest of us, because now you have the idea. And all I'm telling you is do not screw it up.
Wow.
He said, because all you can do from here on is screw it up. You'll never make it better.
Wow.
Than the idea. He said, so don't screw it up. And he gave us one piece of advice, which I am sure we were absolutely going to do if George hadn't told us to. But we had never said it aloud. He said, you must promise me that you will not take a penny from anyone under any situation until the edit is finished, and then will not change it after that.
Wow.
He said, if one person says to you, can't we do another minute of Robin Williams? He said, you will have ruined the whole project and sold us all out.
Wow.
He said, you're not allowed to take a penny. Now, we didn't think anyone was ever, going to ever offer us a penny.
Sure.
So it wasn't that hard a question. And I never considered getting money from anyone else.
Yeah, yeah.
But George Carlin saying that allowed me, when the people came in after we'd edited it and wanted to buy it, to be able to say, no, we made a promise.
Yeah, this is it.
And if we try to change anything, we are not allowed to use any of the George Carlin footage.
Right, right.
And I believe that all the other comics will also get upset. If we do this the way we had it in our heart, they'll all be okay with it. If we start doing it for corporate to sell more, you know, we'll go down. And it was just a really wonderful
thing. No, I love
thing.
That. I love the fact that it doesn't bastardize the movie then and its intentions. And I like the fact that you didn't offer us anything. I really appreciate that. Thanks a lot.
That meant a
getting
lot.
Rich off my dumb joke, you loser. You're here in your billion-dollar house, and I'm sitting in Harris in a lousy room going, I got to do 6 shows a night. I'm a loser.
How many shows do you do at Harris?
No, I'm doing like 12 a week. It's my last time there. I can't take it anymore. I'm like starting in October. Thank God things have been going really good. I'm going to start just doing theaters, so I'll be working 2 days a week.
You're headlining Atlantic City, right?
Yeah, I did the Borgata one night, one show. That's the way to do it, man.
Yep.
Work once a week. It's great. Oh, my God.
Where do you live now? Do you look
at that?
No, I actually sold my place in Manhattan and moved into Connecticut because my folks are there and I like it there. And try finding black guys in Connecticut, okay? I mean, come on, because I like the blacks, you know.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Why wouldn't you?
Oh, screw more black guys than Hurricane Katrina. Trust me. I know it. It's hot. What can I tell you? But, you know, I'm going to take the other 5 days a week just chill, you know. It's nice.
So you mostly got into this business to get out of it?
Pretty much, yeah. I'm tired, dude. You know what I want to do? I want to save enough money by the time I'm 50 to retire, or at least threaten my management with retiring. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, really? I'll quit. Okay, come back, please. I love that.
Now, one of the things that I've noticed about friends of mine who are really, really successful stand-ups is they all seem to want to get out of it.
Well, it's
they
because
all want
it's
to go
tiring.
Into movies.
It's tiring.
I did 30 years on the road with my little magic show. You know, we're still doing 6 shows a week, 46 weeks a year.
Yeah, but also you're in one place now. Aren't you a little bit happier that you're not constantly
packing?
No,
I love
packing.
Being on the road. The only reason we wanted to get off the road was that the stupid airport security. Because we fly 5 times a week. And, you know, as Shakespeare said, the insolence of office is a reason to kill yourself.
Right.
You know?
Right.
You give those people a little bit of power, it's a horrible thing. So we were really, I mean, now I have a family. So now I'd want to be off the road. But actually, the airport security predates my family.
Yeah.
And maybe created my family. But,
is it that they would like, because you have such weird stuff you travel with?
No, there's no funny stories about this.
Oh, okay.
It would be simply standing there and watching them shake down old ladies and take people out of wheelchairs. It was never the way they treated me. Because, of course, you should treat me badly.
Right.
I'm huge. I'm a loudmouth. I've got a ponytail.
Right.
Fine to beat me up. You know, there's this whole thing like, you know, when they came for them, I wasn't worried because I was there.
Right.
For me, it's when they came for me, I wasn't worried.
Yeah.
They should be hassling me.
Right.
So they start beating up old ladies and I get upset.
Well, yeah, you know what? That always bothers me, too, about coach. Like, now that I fly first class, I look at the way they treat people in coach and I feel sad, but not sad enough to stick up for them.
Exactly.
I'm like, you know what? Whatever, loser.
We're going to be back after this with Lisa Lamb. Campanelli, one of the aristocrats. It's Ben Gillette on Free FM. Ben Gillette here on Free FM with, as always, Michael Goudeau. Not getting in a word edgewise because we have Lisa Lampanelli here, one of the aristocrats, and someone really, really funny. How long have you been? You were complaining about being on the road doing
these shows. I know.
And how hard you work. How long have you been doing it?
16 years.
16
so
years?
So it is a while, you
not
know.
Not that long.
Well, not compared
and
to you.
Have you had other jobs?
Yeah, I was a journalist for Rolling Stone.
Oh, really?
And for Spy.
Who'd you write about?
Oh, man, every rocker, man. It was in the 80s. When you mentioned Geddy Lee before off the air, that's when I was like, woo, because I interviewed Geddy three times.
Uh-huh.
And he always loved me because I knew what I was talking about. You know, I just actually got into journalism to be able to meet rock stars, not bang them or anything. But I was like,
you must have banged a few of them.
Dude, I didn't. I swear to God, I was like 300 pounds at the time, so I wasn't having none of that. But I just wanted to be around them, you know? And the dumbest interview ever was Bon Jovi. I hope he ain't listening because that guy's dumb as a post. Oh, my God. He's adorable, but his answers are like, I don't know. Just don't know. I'm like, ugh, die.
Who are your favorite interviews?
Oh, Getty was awesome. Ian Anderson
you a libertarian?
I don't even know what that is.
Okay.
I don't even read. Do you understand? It gets me depressed.
That's a very important part of
it. I watch BET Comic View. That's it. That's all I watch is the colors. That's all I care about.
What made Geddy Lee so great?
He was really smart. And it's funny with rockers, you know, people think they're all stupid, but not many of them are. He's a bright guy. He gets it. And he's really talented.
But speaking of smart, did you ever interview Zappa?
No, I never did.
Because I only met Zappa a couple times,
right.
And he was just fabulous to talk to.
Really?
You know? Because he just was so smart and well-rounded and so sane.
Yeah.
And that's a terrific thing about Zappa. You know, he knew he had to do these kind of crazy things for showbiz.
Right.
And then he was a great dad, really knowledgeable on everything and really polite and really terrific.
Well, don't you find that's kind of how you are, too? Because, like, you have to be insane on stage. That's how I am. You have to be kind of crazy. But you don't come off and then you're calling everybody the C word
well,
and the
N
word.
I do believe that to do stuff, you know, it's very different with our stuff than comedy.
Right.
Because I have found that some comics can be fairly crazy on stage and also crazy off.
Right.
But if Teller and I do that, we die.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And that really is, that is literally the truth.
You know,
if I get a really funny idea that I want to run with in the middle of the bullet catch,
right,
and I don't follow all the rules exactly right,
right,
Teller gets his head blown off.
Right.
You know, so we never drink, we never need drugs, we're never late, everything is organized. It's the most tight-ass organization ever,
yeah,
because when you're dealing with stuff that could be dangerous, you don't want to get hurt.
And no, you're right about
the
that.
The thing I'm most proud of is nobody that's worked for us or either of us have ever been hurt, you know, seriously enough to be hospitalized.
That's unbelievable.
You get hurt all the time, but right. I mean hurt like, ow, ow, ow,
yeah,
ow, ow,
yeah,
but not hurt like, you know,
right,
in a coma.
Well, what's funny is like my team, too, I mean, I have an opening act. I have this homo who opens for me because it wasn't for gay guys. Us fat chicks wouldn't have any friends. And he follows me around the road. He's my opener. And it's like he's sober, and I don't drink. I don't do drugs. I'm addicted to men and food. That's it. I mean, how harmful is that? You know? And they're both chocolate, so fine. But I really don't like a whole lot of drugs and drinking. I'm like, this business is nutty enough. Let's just, like, be normal. Let's have fun. But actually, it's funny as hell. So you get to come home to your wife and your beautiful children. I got nothing, dude. I swear to God. I'm like, what do me and my homo do? We go eat at IHOP, make ourselves throw up, and watch Dawson's Creek in the fetal position.
Yeah.
We don't have a fun. Everybody thinks comics are banging and having a great time. Nothing. It off. That's terrible.
How'd you get the job at Rolling Stone?
Oh, that was cool. I went to college at Syracuse University for journalism, and I worked at Popular Mechanics because I'm such a whore for attention. I just wanted to work for something that everybody's heard of. You know,
uh-huh.
So, oh, Popular Mechanics. I'll work in the automotive division. So I saw an ad for Rolling Stone. I was like, oh, I want to work there. So then it just ended up growing after that. It was cool.
That's great. Tell us about some of the other interviews. Let's hear
Ozzy. Ozzy the day he got out of rehab the first time.
I've never met Ozzy.
Oh, he'd only had like four drinks. It was great. Yeah, but it's so funny because I have the tape still of all the interviews, every hair band in the world. Like, remember the old days, Cinderella, Dokken?
Oh, yeah,
yeah,
sure.
Emerson, Lake, and Powell. Yeah, like, what happened to the real drummer? You
know, they all, there's a big resurgence in that.
Oh,
you
yeah,
know,
sure.
Huge nostalgia. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Those tapes are probably worth a ton now.
See, I should sell them on eBay and buy more Coach bags. That's what's turned into a typical bitch.
And how'd you get from, we were a spy.
Yeah,
when,
spy was cool.
When were you writing a spy?
Well, what I did was I went to this program at Harvard. See, I'm very smart. I don't use my education.
Yeah.
I don't bother with that. But I went to Harvard, and they hired me right out of there at spy. And
really?
It was real cool.
What year?
God almighty. 90. No. It's got to be like 88 or something like that.
When spy was super.
It's when it really was a startup.
Yeah.
Wasn't it great?
You know, we were on the very first issue of spy. We were on the cover.
That's right.
We did a gag on there.
That's right.
Of the people who wrote at spy, it was one of those wonderful, shining moments.
It was.
I don't like to read ephemera at all.
You know,
I have to read a little bit of newspapers, but I don't like to read magazines ever. And spy was the one exception. I could really read that, like Lampoon in its glory days. There was a while that Lampoon was great. And how'd you go? Did you go from spy into stand up?
Yeah, what happened was I was at spy and it was just, you know, I felt way over my head, you know, because I wasn't as smart as everybody. But then again, they're doing a coffee table book that's coming out soon. And the guy told me when he interviewed me, every single person who worked there said they felt over their head, that everybody else was smarter.
Well, that's the only place you want to work.
Yeah.
If you feel you're the best person, the band quit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I was like, okay, you know, I'm going to do something else. So I had this, like, emotional breakdown and decided I want to be a teacher and touch lives. So I can... Because I need to be famous in my own mind. I said, where can I go for teaching? Columbia. So I decided to go to the most expensive teaching college in the world, which I just finally paid off my dumb student loans for. I taught for like a half a year and said, oh, I hate children. Okay, that's a problem.
When you're calling
computer classes, because I was just like trying to get a feel if I liked kids.
Yeah.
And no, I don't. So like, I like my nieces and nephews because they're related to me, but every other kid should die other than yours because I'm on your show. But I'll talk about them too tomorrow. So I taught for like a half a year and said, forget this. And I went into stand-up. I took a little class. I saw it advertised.
You took a class?
Well, dude.
You are
so addicted
to education, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know what to do. I go, how do you just, go up there and talk?
Who was teaching the class?
Some jerk called Michael Jackson, who wasn't the real Michael Jackson because this guy was black. And we did the show. We did this little show at the end of the class. And believe it or not, I killed. And I said, you know what? This is for me.
I like this.
Called in sick the next day. And that was it. I was like, no more.
So directly from teacher to stand up.
Yeah. You know, it's great, man. I mean, please. Okay, my parents hate me, but everybody, I'm like the shame of the family. You know, because my brother's this like nice guy. He's an executive at ESPN, six kids, beautiful house. My sister volunteers with cripples and retards. Me, I say the C word on stage. I black guys. And I said, you know, I mean, it's pretty bad. If my parents had to do a Sophie's Choice, they probably put me in there.
No, where are you from?
Connecticut.
Oh, so you're going back. Oh, you said near your parents.
Yeah, I like that. I actually flew them to Vegas to see me.
You're kidding about that. Your parents are fine with your actor.
You know what? They're happy because of the Tonight Show stuff. That's something they can relate to.
Sure.
I was on the Tonight Show twice in 6 weeks because it really killed.
Uh-huh.
And that they could brag about. But all these other shows, oh, she shouldn't talk about the sex and the blacks. Like my mother, though, that's where I get my sense of humor. She's always like, if it wasn't for the blacks, we wouldn't have 6 o'clock news. You know what I mean? She cracks me up. Like the stuff she says, I just write it down and then I use it and it's jokes. She'll go, oh, these Jews, they made up Hanukkah because they were jealous of us. I'm like, don't get me started on Kwanzaa, huh? She's hilarious. She's like Archie Bunker with boobs. I'm telling you, she's tough.
Now, you do so many things that are what Provenza would call in his highfalutin way,
yes,
transgressive. You know?
Wow.
That's what he loves to talk about in comedy.
Right, right.
But you do a lot of stuff.
That's
racial and, mm-hmm, and sexual,
yep,
and religious and so on. What hassles do you get about that?
I used to get emails, some hate mail, you know, mm-hmm, people who didn't get it. But my whole feeling is, you know what? A third of them is going to get you, a third don't care, and a third hate you.
Uh-huh.
That's fine. Whatever. I concentrate on the third who love me.
But, you know, there's a lot of, especially the liberal faction in this country,
right,
talks a lot about the suppression of freedom of speech and all of this. And the question that I'm really like to ask anybody that does that is, how much hassle are you getting? You know, Eminem, a couple years ago, had the number one album in the country,
mm-hmm,
where he uses, as we call on radio, the F word, mm-hmm, over and over again about the president. It was the number one album in the country for that year.
Right.
And I talk to people like Gilbert and like Saget and mm-hmm, like you,
mm-hmm,
and say, what have you gotten? And the answer is always none.
Yeah.
So there's
well,
this
no,
weird...
actually, what was really funny is the ACLU asked me to do a benefit for them. And believe it or not, I go up there and I go, wow, I'm just here because because I get to say the N-word and you can't boo me. You know what I mean? And actually, they appeared very shocked at me. So they're kind of like hypocrites, too.
Well,
I was like, come on, man,
well,
laugh.
You know, there's a lot of that idea, you know, that you should be able to make fun of racial issues is not, you know, that kind of censorship, if you will, or disapproval comes from the left. It doesn't come from the right.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, the right does not mind you using the N-word.
Right. Well, you know what, correction, they love it. The funny thing is, it's always the white people who get mad.
Well, of course.
That cracks me up because there's always these who are soccer moms looking at me like, oh, my God, she's the reason we have school shootings, which is not true. It's the blacks.
Yeah.
Now, see, that's obviously just a joke based on a racial stereotype. Blacks do not go to school. So what they have to understand is, that's what cracks me up. I always say to interviewers, see, now that I have a little success, interviewers are mean to me. They're trying to create, like, controversy. Before, I was a nothing, and they were like, oh, she's great. Now everybody's like, oh, you're controversial, this and that. And I'm like, dude, you know what? You had a little success. Shut up. I'm not a senator. I'm a comic. I just get to say what I want.
That's what I want to talk about, is that controversy. Is there any controversy around you at all?
Not too much. I mean, I guess I have a few people who hate me or whatever. I mean, I got yelled at.
The same ones that are writing to me.
Yeah, and I got yelled at by a cripple because the cripples was mad at me because I didn't make fun of him. See, everybody likes to be included. And really, what's he going to do? Run over my foot? F you. You know what I mean?
But Lenny Bruce pointed out a lot that the people that were offended were never the people he was talking about.
Absolutely.
Do you have much of a racially mixed audience?
Oh my God, that's what's so funny about me. My audience in a big city is always like 35% Hispanic. Hispanics love me. They got the best sense of humor on the planet. Mm-hmm. Probably 25% black, and the rest kind of a combo of whites and stuff. Because I do appeal to all races and ages. That's what I like, you know? So it's cool. I like that.
Yeah. And
I'm lucky because they're always the colored to know their place.
Yeah.
And now it's those dirty Asians that are the problem. They always crack me up because I'm always thinking Asians won't have a sense of humor, you know, because they got the messed up eyes and everything. But they're pretty good, I got to tell you. And Jews are good, too. You're a Jew, right?
No, I'm not a Jew.
You
say that again, you'll be out of this house.
Don't you erase a Jew.
My name is Gillette.
How stupid are you?
Jewy? You are so stupid. Look at the size of this nose.
It's like a pimple.
It's like a pimple on my face.
But I thought you were a Jew bastard.
I'm not a Jew bastard.
I thought you were a
not even close. I'm an atheist from Western Massachusetts.
Wait.
We didn't know any Jews. I didn't even know a Jew, let alone be a Jew. I'm going to throw her ass out of here. Screw her. Yeah, this is Penn Jillette on Free FM here with Michael Goudeau, and we have Lisa Lampanelli. And if you were listening before the break, you would just call me a
no,
Jew.
No, you know, I want to apologize for that because I don't consider Jew an insult, but apparently you do. Now, you know what? I do have a funny story, though, they remind me of, because Joey Bishop, the story you said about him, how you have to really go on the fly and do whatever you can to kill. One time, Sally Jesse Raphael, I used to do her warm-up for her show. So she asked me to do a benefit for this society called Akim, which is for retarded kids in Israel. So it's this black tie event, and I wear this big cross. And because I forget it's for a Jew cause. So I'm like, oh, my God. So I'm doing it. And before my set, they're like, and now a film of our children. And they show all the retarded Jewish kids in Israel. And now here's Lisa Lampanelli. And it's like, is that the worst intro ever? I can't follow retards.
How could you be funnier than them?
Yeah, you know what? You're absolutely right. They are hilarious. See, my great idea was I'm a little too old to have kids, so I was thinking of adopting a little retarded kid because you don't have to save for college tuition.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? All these idiot white couples adopting Asians. You got to save for Yale, Harvard, buy them a freaking nail salon. Not me. My new campaign slogan, adopt a retard, buy a freaking boat. I rest my case. That's how I roll. But all those things, all those TV appearances are like that, where you got to just edit and edit. Did you see the Pam Anderson roast on Comedy Central?
No, I didn't.
Oh, my God.
I guess I was sleeping.
Well, let me tell you something. They played it over and over. I had to do that, and it was Courtney Love acting freaking insane
for three hours. Oh, yes. I saw it on the news.
Yeah. It actually made the news because she was that nuts. And she actually grabbed me after my set. It was so horrifying. And kissed me on the lips. Dude, I was high for five freaking days. She tasted like crack and cheap hooker. I'm not saying, dude, there's anything wrong with a lesbo encounter, but I always thought if I had one, I'd be the ugly one. Come on. I'm a funny bitch. I could do better than Courtney Love. B. Arthur, I would have made out with her.
How long was Courtney on?
Holy. Okay, the taping. Okay, you'll see it on Comedy Central for an hour and a half. It was like a 3.5 hour taping. And she, all what she was doing was getting drunker and drunker, or doing, being what, on whatever thing she was on, throwing shoes at people, lit cigarettes. And I'm like, man, if this bitch talks once during my set, it's on. You know, because that's how she's already famous. You know what I mean? I got to do my thing.
That's a way to get into random notes.
Oh, my God. Exactly. There you go. It was horrifying, man. I just went so I could meet Tommy Lee because he's like a black. Yeah. Oh, man. If he put that thing in front of my face, I wouldn't know if I should sit or feed it a peanut. Oh, rare, holla.
So you're a big fan of Tommy Lee?
Oh, absolutely. I love the Motley Crue. I actually always wanted to be a guy.
I believe it's pronounced Motley Crue.
I love the umlauts. You need the umlauts. Yeah. Like Spinal Tap had the umlaut over the N. Yeah. I love that. But Tommy Lee, I always wanted like a rocker like that with long hair, but he's so skinny. Man, if I did him, it would look like I was mopping the freaking floor. Okay? But man, oh, if he was in a donkey show, the donkey would s*** him. Yeah. That's how big that guy is. I am a big fan of his, I'll tell you that much.
And on the Pamela Anderson show,
oh,
what do you do, nothing but boob jokes?
No. I personally did not one boob or whore joke, because I figure by the time I get up, because I have to close it every time now, because everybody bitches that they have to follow Lisa Lampanelli,
yeah,
they're pussies, yeah, few all of them. I always have to go last, so I didn't do any of those type of jokes. I was atypical. I was like, I'm not going to just focus on that stuff. So it was cool. It was like I focused on all the other people. And then,
hold on a second. Yeah. What else is there to say?
Her scientific achievements.
I pretty much, well, yeah, yeah. She's
the Nobel, a lot of Nobel Prize jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you didn't find the 3K of background noise, did you?
I don't know. I forget what I even said, but thank God it was funny. I focused on Kimmel because he was the roast master.
Oh, sure, okay.
I said his rating sucks so bad, ABC started negotiating with Chevy Chase. Because Chevy Chase is... show sucked. I mean,
did you watch it?
Terrible ratings. He raped Fox like a drunk girl at a Puerto Rican Day parade. Okay, forget about it.
But they, I watched those first few shows. It was just amazing. Show to see, yeah, if you ever get a chance to see. Did you ever see the Jerry Lewis talk show that he did?
No.
The tapes of that? He did it like the 70s.
Oh, no.
And he brought in all these people as favors, like Sinatra and stuff.
Right.
And he told these incredible lies.
Right.
Like, if I had one wish, the one section he says, if I had one wish for any of you, it would be to have one friend in show business, because they are the most giving, loving people.
You're just
expecting a Pinocchio thing to happen.
Right,
you know,
right.
You tell one more lie, you're going to turn to stone.
Yeah.
You know,
you find really people in show business are really, I mean,
they're the worst people in the world.
It's just, we are all out for ourselves.
Sure.
You know,
we should be.
I mean, I'll take a guy under the wing, take him on the road with me, but God forbid he gets funnier than me. You're out. I don't need this. You know what I mean? There's another open micers with one good joke sitting there waiting to come on the road with me. I'll pay your airfare if you're not funny.
Absolutely. And he also said, and I can't remember this word for word because it's hard to memorize nonsense, but when he brought out Frank Sinatra,
right,
he said, here's a man who's taken celebrity, blasted it out past the other side of the universe, and brought it back.
Oh, boy.
Frank Sinatra.
Oh, wow.
What are you talking about,
I know.
Jerry?
I mean, like, no
what
sense.
What are you talking about?
He was senile when he was 12. I mean, you know, this was funny. At his roast the other day, this is hilarious. I just go, oh, your movies. How could one person be so irritating in so many movies? And I go, Nathan Lane, how does that happen? and Nathan Lane, dude, he could not take a joke at all.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was saying he's so gay, he Skittles, you know, yeah, and he's like, he's been opened on Broadway more times than Neil Simon plays, you know? And he's looking at me like, who the f*** are you? And I'm like, you big closet cornholer, who are you kidding? You know what I mean? That guy's so gay, my ass hurts. Come on. Step up, homo.
Well, you know, do you know about, I mean, this is, I consider this to be the funniest thing in the world. You know that Nathan Lane hates Jason Alexander, right?
No.
Hates him.
Why?
Now, there's nothing funnier in the world than hating Jason Alexander. And when I was talking to Jason Alexander about this, he couldn't understand. He can't, because of who he is, being Jason Alexander.
Right.
He couldn't understand why hating Jason Alexander is goddamn funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, how anybody would have the time to hate Jason Alexander.
P.S., why does Nathan Lane hate Jason Alexander?
Because he believes that Jason Alexander outed him.
Because
Jason Alexander said in an interview about some play he'd done on Broadway with Nathan Lane, he said, I was the only straight guy in the cast.
Oh, I see.
And so if PR people and everything, because I guess Nathan Lane is supposed to be some big hetero stud.
Oh, please.
I mean, that's it.
Well, you know what? Let me take this opportunity.
Jason is so funny. Jason is so funny because Jason is such a nice guy.
Yeah.
Trying to do the right thing all the time. He calls up, tries to apologize, gets hung up on. He says he will issue an apology. He'll say he was wrong. He'll do anything. He's just trying to do anything to ingratiate himself. And Nathan won't talk to him. And it's killing me. So I said to Jason, do me a favor. Please go on Stern and out me.
Yeah.
Out me.
Yeah.
Go on and say, you know, I met Pendulum at a bathhouse. And just anything you want to make up, just say it. So I want to call Jason Lane and say, yes, he outed me, too.
Yeah.
But he would not do it. He's too nice a guy to be funny.
I'm going to take this opportunity to out Jason Alexander. He is a big closet case, and he's a bigger closet case than Tom Cruise. Okay? That's all I'm saying. He's so gay, even the gerbils he sticks up there are male. Okay? But you know what's weird about that story? What really hurts my heart? Sandra Bernhard hates me, and I don't even know why. She went on Stern, and she said the nastiest thing, and Stern's going, are you kidding? Lisa Lampanelli's hilarious. I love her. And she's like, she's this, and she's that. And it hurt my feelings.
What was she saying?
Just that
her?
I'm not funny, that I'm a this, I'm a hater, and all this. I'm like, I never even met this dirty dyke. So when we were doing the roast to Jerry Lewis, I thought, oh my God, it's going to be uncomfortable to make fun of her, but I forced myself to. And I said, I ain't going to make fun of her. She's the only one on this dais who could get chicks, and she's the only one I would fear in prison. And I was like, are you kidding me? How can you hate me? Dude, you don't know me from Adam, but I'm going to be honest with you. I have good karma. I'm the nicest person in the world. Because the meaner you are on stage, the nicer you have to be in person.
Rickles
told me that.
Disgustingly how nice he is.
So for somebody to hate you like this guy hates the Nathan Lane, hates the Jason, I'm like, you know, F them all. The right people get us. And I hate Nathan Lane and Sandra Bernhard. You're both dirty and you're going to hell because GodHatesFags.com.
Well, yeah, that really is a site.
Oh, yeah. Is that the weirdest thing, Brett Phelps? He is a crazy bastard.
But you know, I'm always torn about that because the Bible clearly does dislike gays. So, I mean, the problem is that he's taking what people say is the truth. They say the Bible is the word of God. If that's the truth, then perhaps he's correct.
You know what? I think you're probably right.
That's the
all
heartbreaker.
Gays, I'm glad there's AIDS.
Yeah.
I always shake a guy's hand at the end. I'm like, great, now I have the AIDS too. Like, you wouldn't believe it. That used to be like people would moan. Now everybody laughs. They're taking a big swing in this country. It's very odd. Hey, I'll be honest. I would get the AIDS if I could lose that kind of weight. If it was curable, I would get it for a month to drop a quick 80. I would be a fag and a monkey. I don't care. That's how I roll. I'm not staying on that Jenny Craig forever.
Are you on the Jenny
Craig? Yeah, I lost 25 pounds.
And how do you like that Nestle's just bought it?
I know. Isn't that funny? I love it. But it's a great diet. You know what's sick about them, though? Jenny Craig, you can go off yourself, too. Because guess what? I mentioned them on The Tonight Show and on the Jeff Foxworthy Roast. Not one free brownie. Not one free piece of cake. A thank you email. Not even a freaking letter on legitimate stationery. Send me some freaking food, you dirty hoovers.
Is Jenny Craig a person? Or
I think
she likes
Santa
Claus?
And she's probably really fat. Hey, can I plug my website real quick?
Sure, say it now.
InsultComic.com.
InsultComic.com. And, of course, that is Lisa Lampanelli, one of the aristocrats and one of the very, very funniest people. We got to find out why Sandra Bernhard hates you.
Absolutely.
We absolutely have to find that out. This is Penn Jillette on Free FM here with Michael Goodell and Lisa Lampanelli, who, if I have anything to say about it, will be on again. She makes me laugh.
Check out Penn Jillette weekdays from 2 to 3 on Free FM.